Hi, Daryl.
Hi.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm actually a little tired today, so I'm going to try to bring some fake energy.
Bring it on. Help you out.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Why are you tired?
I don't know. I had a pretty decent sleep for once. Maybe it's just all the bad sleeps I have.
You're getting old.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I constantly think about, since we decided we were going to do this podcast, is there anything in the podcast that we could talk about that I'm going to bring up that I don't know about you? And it's hard to think about, right?
Yeah, we're sharers for sure, man.
I was thinking about it the other day because I had a friend that I know in town. He drove past me and then he texted me later and said, "Hey, dude, do you got a full rock concert going on in your car?" And I was like, "What?" I'm like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" He's like, "I drove past you and you were singing like you were putting on a full concert."
To Adele.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. Yeah. Let me guess. You were singing Adele.
That's right. No, this is Celine Dion. I'm Canadian.
Oh, even better.
That's one thing I don't know about you. Are you a singer in the car? Do you sing?
It has to be the right mood and the right song. That's for sure. I'd say yeah. And it's like stupid stuff too, though. Like Eminem.
Yeah.
Like I can't rap. And you know what? My brother Andre chirps me all the time because growing up, I'd like to think I've got rhythm, but I could never remember the real lyrics. And the kid's like 7 years younger than I am. He'd be like, "Renee, those aren't the fucking words, man."
That's awesome.
And to this day, I fuck it up.
"We built this city on sausage rolls."
You just make that up. That's the dumbest thing ever. But that's me. Oh my God. See, yeah, that's awesome. I could see you fucking wailing out in the car.
But see, I'm the type, I don't just sing along. I'm like, I put myself in the full concert. Like, you know, when there's a bridge in the song, I'm talking to the crowd. I'm like, "Are you guys fucking ready for this?" Like, I pretend there's a crowd out there. And it's funny because I used to be embarrassed if someone saw me, I'd pull up at a light, I would stop singing, I'd just pretend I was all cool. Then as soon as I got away from the car beside me, I'd be like just wailing. But I had a girlfriend, she asked me out, and on our first date, I said to her, "So what made you ask me out?" I'm like, because we worked the same bar together, and I said, was it my bartending skills? Was it the jokes I do? She's like, "No, you were driving behind me the other day, and I was watching you in my rearview mirror." And I was like, "Okay." I was like, "That's fucking creepy." She's like, "And I saw you singing."
I can't imagine that being a turn on for anyone.
Apparently it is, just for this one girl. I didn't marry her.
I got to meet this
girl.
It
didn't work out.
Welcome to today's episode, Taming the Hustle.
Or something of the sorts.
And I'm Rene Boudreau, certified financial planner.
I'm Daryl Boulay, what you call me, the marketing guru.
Marketing extraordinaire.
Yeah. So listen, let's we should probably start this show. Everybody wants a piece of me. I'm a lonesome man making history. They say we're all just raindrops in a stream.
So what are we talking about today, Daryl?
Today, I'm actually going to talk about starting a business and why it's the easiest and hardest thing you'll ever do. And it kind of hand in hand is that when you and I talk about retirement, I'm hoping you can talk about something you do with your clients, you've done with me, is the stress test, the retirement stress test.
The old stress test strategy.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I'd love to talk about that.
It's a really cool idea. And I think it's an important thing to talk about because so many people don't practice what they preach.
I'm still stuck on you saying that, starting a business could be the easiest thing you ever do. I've never heard any business owner say that.
So you're
I'm calling you bullshit on that.
I can see how you think that. Once the .com era really came to be and become a big boom with websites like Shopify, it made it really easy for someone who knows technology, someone who knows social media to literally start a business, get it up and running. And you hear those success stories of someone who has some designs and they make t-shirts. They don't know how to run a website, but they pay Shopify $30 a month. And next thing you know, they're selling, 100,000 shirts a year. and they're rolling in the dough, and it was the easiest thing they ever did.
So if someone would sell pizza dough online and would make a ton of money, could say they're rolling in the dough.
They could. And that's the thing. The .com has made things easy. But at the same time, when I say it's the hardest thing you'll ever do.
That's the part I know.
That's the part most people know is that it is the hardest thing you're ever going to do. The startup lifestyle is fucking grueling. It's long hours. It's roller coasters of emotion. It's one thing after another. And one of the things that a lot of my clients who are in startup phase, what they kind of ignore is they come to me and they say, I have a niche market. Like there is nobody else out there doing what I'm doing. And I always say, well, give me 5 minutes and I'm going to find them. And I always do. Because believe it or not, every new business enters a crowded space. You are not the only one. It's very hard to be the only one in this world in our day and age.
It's like when you met Spielberg and you've told me that story 1,000 times.
Yeah.
You typically don't have new ideas. I mean, that's pretty rare nowadays.
Exactly. Like what Spielberg had told me way back when I got to work with him was that it's okay to look at other people's work and copy it and then make twists on it to make it your own, because coming up with original stuff is really difficult. Another thing that's really hard, and it's the last thing I'm going to talk about the hard, because I feel businesses struggle enough as it is, but if you're starting a new business, you are already underestimating the realistic cost to starting a business. I'm guilty of it when I first started my business. I know so many companies who are guilty of it, because you think, this is all I need. I don't need anything more. Maybe I put a contingency in there of like 10% of my budget. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait, no one wants to buy from me online. They like my shirts, but they want that shirt to try on. So do I get a store or do I offer free returns? Right? And then it's like, okay, well, yeah, I'll offer free returns. No big deal. Except now all of a sudden there's a shipping costs associated with that. And people are ordering size small. You know your shirt fits tight, but you're sending it to them anyways. You see where I'm going with this.
We've seen this really come to surface with the pandemic as well too, right? The added cost of trying to survive during a pandemic. I feel bad unless you capitalized on an opportunity during the pandemic. I feel bad for startup companies that got caught in the middle of that, because I could see how it would be very, very difficult.
Definitely. So I want to talk about the easy stuff, because I think everything I'm going to mention here, everyone's going to say, oh, I thought that was the hard stuff, but it's actually the easy part of starting a business. The first one is following your passion. That is super easy. If you have a passion for this business, it will succeed. If you don't, that's where it gets hard and you fail. So I want to talk about the easy stuff, because the hard stuff is the negativity. And I think that, let's just start off with the top, following your passion. That's the easiest thing you can do to start your business.
No doubt. No diggity, no doubt.
No diggity, no doubt. And it's one of those things where you get to control your lifestyle, you get to control your schedule, and those are the easy things. I know there can be twists in there to make it hard, but your passion itself can help you succeed. If you don't believe in your business and you don't have passion in it, how can you help it succeed?
Yeah, and let's not all be naive and say that it's all unicorns and rainbows. I mean, when you are in business for yourself, and you're an entrepreneur and you're passionate about what you do, it makes all the sacrifices worth it.
Yeah, definitely. No, I completely agree. And like now taking the business part and bringing that back in is that there are tools out there and you have to find the right tools that work for you. There's a lot of cookie cutter things out there that helps you build websites, that help you build an online store, that does your books for you, your bookkeeping, that does legal services for you. They don't all work for everybody, but the ones that do work for you make your life so much easier, right? Whether it's, like I said, if you need a website, and we're going to talk about that in another episode, because websites, oh man, people think that they don't need them anymore, but you can build a website. Even if you have no talent at all, you can get a website up.
When are we going to talk about websites in another episode?
In another episode.
Okay. Yeah. Just checking.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I get passionate about websites. But things like PayPal, right? Those make your life easy, because PayPal eliminated that trying to get credit so you can get a Visa machine and stuff like that.
I preach to my team all the time that you're only as good as the tools that you have to work with.
Exactly.
Right? And that goes in pretty much any industry.
Yeah. And now I'm going to say this, and not every, but a lot of business owners right now are going to throw things at their speaker, or they're going to pull out their headphones for a second and be mad at me. But funding your business can be easy. If you have a great idea for a business, there's things like Kickstarter, Indiegogo, and one of my favorites now is AngelList, which are angel investors. You never meet them. You don't know who they are. They know all about your business and they'll invest in it. And it's all online. And people are actually getting funding like in the millions for businesses.
Yeah, and at the local level as well too. Like our office was fortunate to be able to capitalize on some grants for some of the safety protocol for the pandemic. I think we're on our third one and applying for our fourth internship program that we've kept.
Amazing.
You know, beyond the 1 year. So there's funding at the local level that you can reach out to the right people to get some help on that.
Definitely. And that's the thing. If you put in the little bit of hours you need to actually research and find the right things.
Absolutely.
It can be so easy. I know people who got funding on Kickstarter. A bunch of strangers donating $5 at a time, and all of a sudden they had $500,000. They started a beer company.
Nice.
And to me, when they first, again, it's one of those things, if you are passionate about it and you can sell it, this shit's like Dragon's Den.
So if everyone donated a buck or two, did they call the brewery Buck or Two Brewery?
Oh, they should have.
Boom. Bad joke out of the way for the day.
But that's the thing. It seems ridiculous, but at the same time, you watch Dragon's Den on TV, and you see these people pitching businesses, and the ones who have a terrible pitch, and we sit at home as viewers and say, wow, that looks like a great product. But you got to think about the investors who are sitting there looking and saying, okay, well, if you can't even pitch this to me, how is this going to work? So if you can actually put together a good Kickstarter campaign or an AngelList thing or whatever, and try to get funding from that, even if it's a partial funding, if you can sell, passion. That's it. That's all I got to say. Just be fucking passionate about your goddamn business.
Passion.
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 I have a passion for ads because I'm a marketer. So let's listen to one.
When my parents started investing responsibly, I became a huge fan of renewable energy.
Your wind energy pun really blows.
See what you did there.
Impact investing is no joke. Hashtag call Renee, responsible investment specialist of St. Cyr & Associates.
And we're back.
We're still here.
So what did you do during your break?
It's funny. You know, when I used to have a radio show long ago, and people would ask me, what do you do when the ads are on? And I would always say, I listen to the ads. And they say, but it's so repetitive. You hear them so often. And as a writer, as a producer, as a marketer, I listen to ads and I critique the shit out of them.
I know you do that.
And even our...
I'm sorry. My voice is my voice. I can't make it any better.
No, I know. But that's what we work on. We tweak your voice and make it better.
Yeah. Jackass.
So listen, let's talk about stress. I'm just kidding. No, let's talk about the stress test.
Yeah. So this is probably nothing new, but we like to think we sort of created this idea. But maybe we just learned how to vocalize it to our clients. So what we do is when we have a financial plan that was designed for a client and they have a shortfall. Okay, so let's say you're 58 and you're really, really stuck on retiring at 60. And we just recently started working with you and we designed a full plan. And we determine that there's a shortfall in your retirement. So you don't have enough assets to fund your current lifestyle. So let's say your lifestyle costing you $8,000 a month.
Yes, I like it.
So $8,000 a month is what you're spending now, which is your income minus all of your expenses. And that what goes in your physically bank account and pays for the maintenance of your house, your travel, your food, your booze, raising your kids, you know, your vehicle, your insurance, all of that stuff. If we determine that you can only live off of $7,000 a month with, say, a 2% inflation at age 60, then there's a shortfall. And the solution to that is you're either going to budget and live off of less, or you're going to have to decide to work longer so you can make up that shortfall, or maybe play with inflation and say, you know what, I'm okay with my purchasing power to be eroded over time. So I'm only going to take a 1% inflation, for example.
Gotcha.
When the client wants to retire on a certain date and says, I'm going to make it happen no matter what. Well, my suggestion is we put them through an exercise that we call the retirement stress test.
Do you put them on a treadmill with like those little suction cups and wires and shit? Yeah.
Good. We call them nipples, but They are suction cups.
Just kidding.
So we nipple you up and we make sure that you're in good hands. No, listen, so the lifestyle for us, like you and I talk about this all the time with the toothpaste syndrome. And so the toothpaste syndrome, is, when it comes to the lifestyle is, you know, when you get accustomed to driving a caddy and you've always got the newest iPhone and you travel pretty much whenever you want.
Yeah.
And you buy, you know, Angus beef. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to go back, right? It's hard to put that toothpaste back in the tube.
100%.
And so we try to solve for our client is for them to be able to transition into retirement without affecting their lifestyle. But when a client is adamant that they want to retire on a certain date, my challenge to them with this stress test is if you can only afford to live off of $7,000 is before you actually quit and realize after it's too late is try to live off of the $7,000 now.
So that's when you become a Walmart greeter.
Yeah. So we can sometimes actually reinvest the $1,000 and set it as a budget so that it's an expense that they're going to put away in maybe their TFSA or non-registered account, something that's liquid. So I'm going to give you a 12-month stress test to see if you have the ability to retire with $7,000 a month and not feel short or stressed for money.
Yeah.
So that'll accomplish two things is it gives you that practice run before you actually make the mistake of retiring and realize you don't have enough money or that you can't live off that $7,000 a month. And the other thing is if you can, now you have an extra $12,000 at the end of the year plus the growth in the investment. So you're sitting on $12,000, $15,000 extra to fund that retirement. So for that 58-year-old who wants to retire at 60, you've got 2 years worth of practice run to really be able to figure out if this is something you can do and if it's something that will fit your lifestyle before you decide to quit teaching or you quit an executive position that you won't be able to get back if you decide you have to go back in the workforce.
I take it as a sports analogy in a sense, because like when I played hockey, we would warm up before the game. You'd have a 20-minute warm-up and then you'd go out and actually play the game. And during warm-up, there are times where you're like, oh man, my hamstring, there's no way I can do it.
Right.
And then you go back in and you say to the coach, like, I there's no way I can play today's game. I know I'm the leading scorer, but listen, I'm my hamstring, I'm going to pull it and I'll be fucked for, and that's kind of the way I look at it.
That's a good comparison.
Like you said, with the toothpaste syndrome, and I got to go back to the Walmart greeter. Cause I feel like I diss Walmart greeters and I don't want to do that. Cause they're very nice to me. They're actually very lovely people.
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't want a Me Too Walmart movement. You know what I mean?
Oh man, you never cease to be a jackass.
This should be called Taming the Hustle or With the Jackass.
Yeah. The Me Too movement.
The Walmart Me Too movement.
Yeah, but most of those people are retired. And for many of them, it's not monetary. It's they need a sense of purpose and just want to go out and socialize. So
see, for me, I 100% believe that this is what I'll do when I retire is that I want to retire, be able to maintain the lifestyle I have now, be able to take some trips, which is a little bit above what I do now because I work so much that I don't take trips.
Right.
But I want to do those things, but I also want to still be that old man running around the office and being like, hey, I got ideas for the new marketing campaign. And, you know, and I want all, whether I'm still, maybe I've passed the business on to somebody else, but I still want to be there. I want to be that old man that when I leave the room, people are like, oh, that crazy old motherfucker. Yeah. Right. It's like,
yeah, the Warren Buffett of the marketing world.
I don't need to make money from it if I'm retired. Like I'll be okay as long as I can maintain my lifestyle. But I think that stress test is important because I kind of played around with that when we first started talking about it. And I was like, huh, what is my lifestyle now? And if I were to retire and kind of added up all the numbers, it's like, shit, I would have to work a little bit longer than I want to.
I've spent most of my career living below my means and hoping to have the ability to have a healthy and long retirement. In fact, I'm like you, I don't think I'll ever fully retire.
Yeah.
You know, but when we step away from the business in our ripe old age, we'd like to do some traveling and it's going to cost us more in retirement to fund our lifestyle than it is now.
Yeah, right?
And that is the opposite for many.
Nice. Well, hey, listen, we're going to take a break. I'm going to have a little nap because I did say I was tired. And when we come back...
I think you're wearing off on me.
Yeah, you're getting a little sleepy. Eh?
I'm just a little mellow.
Yeah. Do you want me to
put on... Not feeling your vibes.
Here, listen. You hear that soft, slow music? It's like a lullaby. You want me to turn it off, eh? Okay, I'll turn it off.
Okay, bye.
Your financial future should be in the hands of someone you know and trust. So why should you have to read a name tag to know who your advisor is?
We don't even wear name tags. Hashtag call Renee, certified financial planner of St. Cyr & Associates.
Hey, welcome back. Our nap is over. And I want to talk about something that's actually crazy important to me. And I am so terrible at it. Sleep. Yeah,
I know. Oh, I
was, you were thinking sex.
I was thinking sex. That was a dead giveaway. Yeah. So means so much to me, but I'm terrible at it.
It did sound like I was talking about sex, but no, I think I'm good at sex.
Wrong podcast.
Yeah,
carry on.
We'll talk about that later.
We won't talk about that later.
We will. I want to talk about sleep health. And we are not doctors, not even fucking
we
close.
Are not experts at this.
We're more like the fictional doctors on TV.
We're more like the test dummies of sleeping. Figure out how we can do it right.
Just by keep practicing.
Yeah. The do's, Husker do's and Husker don'ts.
Yeah. Seriously though, I listen to podcasts, I read articles. I'm always trying to figure out how to sleep better. There's stupid things like apps out there. Not that apps are stupid. They're just stupid for me because
you've been struggling with this for a long time.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where there are a few things that have helped me along the way. And I just want to share them with people because I think they're important. And one of them for me is I used to always take the shirt out of the beer case that you get for free and a pair of boxers that are, you know, torn and tattered, and I would go to sleep in that.
That's a horrible visual.
It is a horrible visual. But when I kind of realized and I actually bought sleepwear, like proper sleeping, like I bought really nice comfy shorts.
They're called pajamas.
No, I know they're called pajamas. But it was one of those things where I built a wardrobe for sleeping. And it seemed idiotic to me. It seemed like a waste of money at the time. But I had read this article that said to do it. And I'm like, I'm going to give it a try because I feel like I was out of options. And honestly, when you jump into bed, the stuff you're wearing makes you feel great. Even your sheets and blankets. If you have crappy sheets and blankets and they're uncomfortable, you are never going to have a good night's sleep.
See, going back to living below our means is, and also having a smaller carbon footprint on the planet is that I just sleep naked. So I don't have to buy any PJs. I don't have to increase consumption. I don't have to spend any money.
I'm with you. I can't do it.
And I sleep like a baby.
I can't do it. It could be 102 degrees in my house and no fan on, nothing. And it's like, I could be as hot as possible, but I need a shirt and shorts on.
Clothing's overrated.
I know. I don't know why. It's just a comfort thing. It's like a warm hug.
But having said that, though, the sheet part is really, really important.
Well, like when you're naked, yeah.
Meg buys these amazing, I don't even know what the hell. There's a thread count. Like, I know nothing about that stuff. But the shit she buys is like you're staying at a 5-star hotel every night when you crawl into bed. And it's awesome.
And now, I completely agree. That's when you go to a 5-star hotel, I always sleep like a freaking baby.
Well, Meg swears that she sleeps better the night because she changes her sheets so regularly because the night she puts on fresh sheets, she sleeps like a champ.
Yeah, yeah. I got to take exception with sleep. I just said sleeps like a baby. I've never met a fucking baby who sleeps like a log, right? It's just like, it's this, I don't know why that expression's there.
Stupid expression.
Yeah, I do sleep like a baby. I'm awake every hour. I'm crying. I got to pee. I got to, all these things.
You're crying because you shit your pants.
That's right.
You're crying because you pissed your pants.
Yeah,
you're crying because you need the teat.
People are going to say, oh, did you have a good night last night? I'm like, yeah, I slept like a baby. And they'll be like, oh, good for you. When really, I'm telling them the truth. I'm saying, no, I had a fucking shitty sleep.
Yeah, I sucked on a boob.
Yeah,
I shit my pants.
Speaking of sucking on boobs, I have to say sex for me, and I'm sure there's science behind this, can make you sleep better.
I sure hope there is science behind that because I totally agree. I'm revealing everything to my client base today.
You
are. Their financial planner sleeps naked and loves sex before bed.
Yep, that's it. It's well, I think that's
mic drop.
That's the show right there. There's our promo. We talked about a promo earlier. That's the promo.
That's the next commercial.
Yeah, yeah.
You're weird for thinking it's weird.
But no, it does. It's there's all those other things, you know, no blue light, no TV in the bedroom, and your bedroom should only be used for sleeping, which again, the sex thing I think comes in there and it should happen, well, anywhere in the house. So it doesn't matter. You'll still sleep well. But no, for me, I don't know if it's
a de-stressor.
Yeah.
We need to be serious for a second that I really do think it makes a difference.
100%.
Yeah.
It not only emotionally and physically, those two aspects
together. Just
fucking
say you like it. Stop fucking putting fancy words out there. Just say you fucking like sex before bed. That's it. Just say it.
I like sex before bed.
There.
Okay. Hey, I'm ready to go. Are you ready to go?
I thought we were just getting started on this sex topic, but
that's for another
episode.
Let's
not stretch that one out too long either.
No pun intended.
Boom.
All right. We'll see you guys next time. Take care.
Bye.